possible in our voice or in video.
And so, without further ado,
is there when I need.
Hi, I'm Alex Hansery, and you're watching Outside the Box. 3.5 years later, people still have questions about 9/11. A lot of people believe that the 9/11 Commission did not give us the answers that we were asking for. Well, today, I am pleased to invite Mike Rupert to Portland, Oregon. Mike Rupert is the author of 2004's hot-selling Crossing the Rubicon, The Decline of the American Empire at the End of the Age of Oil. You can find this book pretty much anywhere, and this is a book you definitely want to pick up. Mike is also the publisher of From the Wilderness. That's www.fromthewilderness.com. He started out 68 copies, started mailing it to friends, and now it's read by more than 20,000 people around the world, 40 members of Congress in 40 countries. Now, since 9/11, Mike Rupert's been the point man in bringing out the hottest information that contradicts the official version, the White House's version of 9/11. And today we're going to get to some of those questions and hopefully get some answers. Mike, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, Alex.
Now, Mike, I want to get started at the beginning. Before 9/11 happened, you were a researcher of another type, being of the CIA.
Yes.
Okay, how did you get started being a researcher of the CIA?
Really bad luck. I had come from a family, I was born into a family closely connected to the intelligence community. My mother had been a senior cryptanalyst for our Secretary of State, Cordell Hull, during World War II. Dad had left the Army Air Force and the Air Force and went to work for Martin Marietta on top secret projects, the boosters, Titan 3C, that put up the CIA's keyhole spy satellites. His relatives were all CIA, so everybody in the family basically worked in that industry, so to speak. I was born in Washington, D.C. I became a Los Angeles police officer. I actually interned for 3 years while I was an undergrad at UCLA before joining the department. Because of that background, I already had clearances going into LAPD, and they found out the background. The CIA twice tried to recruit me, once when I was still in college before I got the badge and the gun, and then after I turned them down then. And then after I had to hit the streets in South Central Los Angeles and was doing pretty well as a street cop, they tried to recruit me again through a woman who was a CIA operative who became my fiance.
Now, Mike, to the people at home, they were trying to recruit you to do what specifically?
Well, the CIA had been for decades, and they still do today, controlling the drug trade for the purpose of channeling the drug profits into the U.S. financial markets, particularly Wall Street. We've documented beyond reproach. I even lectured at the University of Southern California in December 2000 on this Wall Street's war for drug money, which is how the CIA steers as much as they can of $600 billion a year in drug money through U.S. financial markets to help support the economy. But I didn't know that at the time, but as the second recruitment occurred, I was initially very interested, but I discovered that the task was to work as a liaison between the agency and LAPD to help protect CIA drug shipments to make sure that they were successfully brought into the country and sold, which I refused to do.
At some point, you refused to go along with what they wanted you to do.
Yes.
And what happened to you?
Well, first of all, my fiance disappeared. I was shot at once before and once after leaving the Los Angeles Police Department. My career was officially going very well. I was about to be promoted. I had no disciplinary actions. I had sterling rating reports. But people were trying to kill me. They were burglarizing my apartment. They were threatening me. There was an immense campaign on to pressure me. And I wound up asking the chief of police for help then, a guy by the name of Daryl Gates, after I had a tape-recorded death threat. Or I had tape recorded a death threat, and the message I got back was, the chief is busy, he can give you 5 or 10 minutes in a week to 10 days. If you're still alive, would you like to make an appointment? And it was then that I resigned.
So you've been fighting this battle for a long time, trying to get this information out.
About 28 years. Yeah.
What kind of friction or resistance have you gotten from, say, the mainstream press? I was looking at some information on you last night, and I've noticed you've really been attacked.
Oh, yes, I have, yeah. Which is customary. I mean, We are living now in the 21st century with an extremely well-organized and proficient apparatus to discredit government opponents. I mean, and this was pretty well refined through a program called COINTELPRO in the 1960s and the 1970s. I'm not worried about attempts on my life so much anymore because I'm fairly well known. I travel the world. Mm-hmm. I've got 40 members of Congress who read my newsletter. But even still, we have major attacks on us, not so much from the mainstream media, because that gives you credibility, but from lesser media lights who just make up stuff to assassinate.
And we're
going to
get into that
character.
A little bit.
Sure.
Now, you know, I really want to ask this question because everybody has a theory, like everybody has an opinion. Why do you think that they're bringing in powder cocaine into the streets of L.A. and the rest of the country?
Well,
other than making money.
Well, very specifically, during the Iran-Contra era, this is just a short bit of history, mm-hmm. the CIA, U.S. cocaine consumption went from 79 metric tons in 1970 to over 600 metric tons by 1988. That was all under the direction, with the blessing of William Casey, the CIA, George Bush, and that machinery, and that was specifically to bring in lots of capital into the U.S. financial markets, just to make very cheap capital accessible to people that wanted to buy, borrow, lend, etc.
Right.
South Central Los Angeles, I'm convinced, was particularly targeted, as there was a strong racist component to that. I have a dear friend and colleague, Catherine Austin Fitz, who was a former Assistant Secretary of Housing. And we met in 1998, and some of the data, she got nuked. That's the word we use when you run afoul of the government, mm-hmm. they nuke you. She got nuked after having come up with data out of Housing and Urban Development, which was an overlay of foreclosures, of home foreclosures in South Central Los Angeles.
I saw that Wall Street and drug money, you really put
and
that out
when
there.
She showed me that map, and I had worked narcotics in South Central, it was a perfect overlay for the drug dealing territory. So what happened was, when the crack cocaine epidemic was at its worst, it destroyed home values, and people literally mm-hmm. walked away from houses they couldn't sell.
Wow.
And somebody came along and literally bought somewhere, we don't know the exact number, but let's say between 6,000 and 8,000 single-family mm-hmm. homes for pennies on the dollar, mm-hmm. cleaned them up and resold them. So they make profit on the way down by selling the drugs, and they make profit on the way back up, and that's the way it works.
How was your relationship with researcher, author of Dark Alliance, Gary Webb?
Gary had a remarkable achievement. He broke a story, and he took it further than anyone. Gary's achievement in the Dark Alliance will stand as a milestone for those of us who know how successful he really was. Of course, if you ask the New York Times, he didn't make his case, but we know that he did. And Gary had previously been part of a Pulitzer Prize-winning team for the San Jose mm-hmm. Mercury. Then he broke this story, made worldwide news, and prompted some major hearings in Congress. That whole uproar ultimately led to my face-to-face confrontation with the CIA director John Deutsch in South Central Los Angeles in 1996, mm-hmm. which is something I'd been wanting to do for 18 years at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And God rest him, Gary took his own life this last December, and we will all miss him for that. He has become, there's a term, enemy of the state, like the movie, that you can become, like I have become, like Catherine Austin Fitz has mm-hmm. become. He had become virtually unemployable in the mainstream media, even though he'd previously won a Pulitzer. And he was a thoroughbred horse who didn't have any more races to run, and he couldn't get on the racetrack anymore. And
mm-hmm.
God bless him. We will miss him, and I salute his work. I really do.
There are some that believe that he may not have killed himself. What would you say to, well, more specifically, I'll just ask you, the confrontation between you and Alex Jones. Do you think that there may be a resolution further down the line? And
well, first of all, let me say very clearly, Gary did commit suicide. There is no doubt about that. I did what a detective does. And people who are familiar with my writing, or if you've seen my book, Crossing the Rubicon, I have 1,000 footnotes.
Right.
I went up and interviewed the family. I went up and saw the house where he died. I went over the case. I'm a former police detective, so okay. I know the procedure. Gary had laid the foundation for his suicide for weeks. He wrote 5 separate letters in his own hand, mailing them over a period of days. He changed his life insurance policy. He had moved belongings. I mean, there was a clear pattern that he had seriously been intending to commit suicide, and he did. And I spoke to people who had seen the body.
Now, you said that he prompted the Lock High School committee?
Well, it was his reports, the Dark Alliance series, as they broke in the San Jose Mercury News, which became world news, that prompted a major outrage in South Central.
Right.
And John Deutsch, then the CIA director, who now is on the board of directors of Citibank, chose to make a public appearance at Locke High School in Watts, where he would take questions from the public. And I was already known to several members of Congress from the area, Maxine Waters and Juanita McDonald, and they knew my history, and they got me on the floor, and I got to have a face-to-face with him, and I really got the better of him in that one.
Yeah, that definitely is an amazing video to watch. We're going to take a break right now, and go ahead and see that clip from Michael Rupert confronting former CIA Director John Deutsch on allegations of drug trafficking. We'll be right back.
I am a former Los Angeles police narcotics detective, and I work South Central Los Angeles, and I will tell you, Director Deutsch, emphatically and unequivocally. Narcotics detective, that the agency has dealt drugs throughout this country for a long time.
That is an answer for a lot of you. Now, can you please?
I refer.
All right, now, can you please?
I refer to.
Wait. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Wait a minute here. Wait a minute. If you don't like what's going on here, please leave now. No, leave now, because there are others who do want to hear what's going on in this room. Will you please take your seat? I will come back to you as we roll back across to the center section.
Director Deutsch, I will refer you to 3 specific agency operations known as Amadeus, Pegasus, and Watchtower. I have Watchtower documents heavily redacted by the agency. I was personally exposed to CIA operations and recruited by CIA personnel who attempted to recruit me in the late 70s to become involved in protecting agency drug operations in this country. I have been trying to get this out for 18 years, and I have the evidence. My question for you is very specific, sir. If in the course of the IG's investigations and Fred Hitz's work, you come across evidence of severely criminal activity,
let him speak
and it's classified, will you use that classification to hide the criminal activity, or will you tell the American people the truth?
All right, you want to hear the response first from Congressman Julian Dixon and then from the director. Wait a minute, from your... I'm sorry, sir. I will allow the director to speak first and then Congressman Julian Dixon.
If you have information about CIA illegal activity in drugs, you should immediately bring that information to wherever you want, but let me suggest 3 places. The Los Angeles Police Department.
I am sorry, others want to hear this answer.
It is your choice, the Los Angeles Police Department, the Inspector General, or office of one of your Congress persons of this.
I got shot at for it.
Wait a minute, sir. gotten the mic yet. You are not. But wait a minute, then. Don't speak out of turn.
Let me say something else. If this information turns up wrongdoing, if it turns up wrongdoing, we will bring the people to justice and make them accountable.
All right, Congressman Dixon.
Thank you, sir, for coming.
Let's get the snippet
from Dixon, then we'll cut it.
I thought you did not want to be here, but now that you are here, please let us hear and listen. Thank you very much.
Sir, I want to thank you for coming. You were at the last meeting. The staff probably has the spelling of your name wrong, but we would like to talk to you. We have been looking for a couple of days for you, and we want to make sure that you contact the committee, because obviously you have some valuable information. If you want to give it to me privately, if you want to hand it to that aide where I can contact you this evening, please do it. Don't let us get away without getting a contact for you.
Thank you, sir.
Pass it up to him now, so everyone can see that I got it. That would be fine.
Thank you, sir. And for the record,
please keep the noise down so that we can hear and we can get answers.
For the record, my name is Mike Rupert, R-U-P-P-E-R-T. I did bring this information out 18 years ago, and I got shot at and forced out of LAPD because of it. I've been on the record for 18 years nonstop, and I'll be happy to give you, Congressman, anything that I have.
Thank you.
And we're back. Now we're going to get into 9/11. Again, you're watching Outside the Box with Michael Rupert. Michael Rupert is the author of Crossing the Rubicon. You can get this book on Amazon.com. Pals, or Laughing Horse on 37th and Division.
Or from my website.
Or from his website, www.fromthewilderness.com, or copvcia.com. Now, Mike, on September 11th, 2001, we were attacked by jihadist Afghan terrorists, Al-Qaeda. The reason they did this was because they hated our freedom, I heard somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to have a war on them, or we did have a war on them that lasted a few seconds, a few weeks. Now we're moving to other parts of the world, mm-hmm. other parts of the country even, all to spread democracy and protect us from terrorists. Now, do you see anything wrong with that official line?
Pretty much everything.
Mm.
But yeah.
Other than the fact that we were attacked on 9/11.
Yes. Okay. We were attacked on 9/11, but it was who was really running the attacks, I think, that leads us to the heart of this. But
all right.
There were tons of motives beyond that. I mean, it is absolutely ludicrous to believe that 19 men operating from caves in Afghanistan were able to execute that kind of attack with that precision. I suspected on the day of 9/11, as the attacks were taking place, when the second plane hit the World Trade Center, that would be Flight 11, I automatically knew that there was something wrong. One of the reasons why is because my father, who just passed away a few weeks ago, had flown in Air Force interceptors, and I was very familiar with NORAD. I was raised in the Air Force, and I know the precautions and the standard operating procedures that have been in place since the 1950s, all of which had been circumvented. As soon as that second plane hit, I knew something was wrong. And as we look at the motives for that, really, to sum all the motives up for the attacks of 9/11, oil, oil, and oil.
I understand. I mean, there's a lot of strange aspects of 9/11. You have the supposed NORAD stand down, the insider trading,
right.
the proposed pipeline. So we're going to go ahead and look at some of the big points that you saw are definitely wrong with 9/11. The
right.
big holes in the story, and I think a lot of people should be taking notes at home and check up on the things we're talking about. We'll go ahead and start with the NORAD, supposed NORAD stand down.
Yeah, it wasn't really a stand down. And it's important for anybody who looks at Crossing the Rubicon to understand that I wrote this book, the reason why it's so big, as a legal case,
mm-hmm.
as if I were a homicide detective taking a case to a prosecutor for a filing, and I would take this book to trial right now, and I believe I could secure convictions of Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and a number of other people for their orchestration and coordination.
The book is very good at adding footnotes, I might add.
Yeah, there's 1,000 footnotes in there.
Yeah.
NORAD was not specifically a stand-down. The procedures and mechanisms, as former British cabinet member Michael Meacher said very clearly, 67 times in the calendar year before June, I think, 6th of 2001, NORAD fighters had successfully scrambled and been flying beside off-course airliners within minutes or any commercial airliner, not airliner, but commercial plane on IFR flight rules. And they were there within 5-10 minutes, as in the case of Payne Stewart, the famous golfer whose plane went off course. The planes were scrambled in by them. So why did we have four successive failures on 9/11, some for as long as 45 minutes? What I found in researching the book, not that it was a stand down, which implies somebody issued an order to tell the fighters not to scramble. No, that did not happen. What had happened was, we show, as in terms of the premeditation especially, that in the months of May, in the summer months of 2001, before the attacks, all control of war game exercise were placed directly under the vice president by presidential order.
That's now, let me interject. Was this brought up in the commission?
No, not at all. None of this was brought up in the commission. And Dick Cheney then supervised and approved the scheduling of five. I found another one since the book has been published. Five separate war game exercises, all involving hijacks, on the day of 9/11, all in the Northeast Air Defense Sector. To summarize those briefly, one exercise, Northern Vigilance, moved a large number of U.S. fighters from Air National Guard bases to Northern Canada, Alaska, and another exercise took them to Iceland and Greenland, all out of the region where they were useless,
right,
preparing for a Soviet over-the-pole bomber attack, which is from the 1960s. Another exercise, which Richard Clark brought up in his book Against All Enemies, called Vigilant Warrior, which he mentioned in his book. I was able, through interviewing, and I'm probably the only guy who's really done a lot of original research on 9/11. There are a lot of good books out there about 9/11, but I did the gumshoe work. I did the
quickly. What books would you recommend
Columbo
in addition
work
to yours?
Well, aside from this, certainly David Ray Griffin's books are great.
He's under attack right now as well.
Well, they listen. Yeah. That's the price that you pay. I would, you know, I'm so strict on my use of evidence, I would say stick with David Ray Griffin, because I want to stay away from speculation about that. I don't speculate about
it. Now, the thing about the war game drills, it has been covered by the mainstream press. AP's talked about it. Reuters talked about it.
Well, I cite them in my book, and it was largely through mainstream sources that I was able to find out that, in addition to pulling the fighters out, another war game exercise, Vigilant Guardian, inserted false radar blips onto the radar screens of the FAA controllers and the Air Force, so that when they realize they have four hijackings, they look at their radar and suddenly there's 22 possible hijackings, and the air traffic controllers, this is all public record, it's been confirmed, didn't know where to send the only eight fighters that they have. They have to fly in pairs. So they could only respond to four out of 22, and you don't dare send your fighters in the wrong direction. In addition, the exercise that Richard Clark referred to was confirmed for me in an on-the-record email by a NORAD major, Don Arias, a very interesting guy, side story with that, that there was a live-fly exercise where NORAD actually had an airliner up posing as a hijacked airliner during the middle of the attacks.
Why do they have so many drills going on?
To paralyze the response system, and so that none of the planes could have been hijacked, intercepted, so that the attacks could succeed, successfully destroy the World Trade Center, hit the Pentagon, we'll talk about that in a second, and achieve enough of a shock and awe on the American people to make the American people roll over. That was really the first implementation of shock and awe, was 9/11.
You know, on the, on that topic and note, it reminds me of Condoleezza Rice. We had no idea. Oh. If we knew, we would have, you know, we would have moved mountain and mountain. How do you respond to a statement like that?
She's lying through her teeth. It's one of the most egregious lies I've ever heard in my life, and I tell her that to her face.
Okay, so there was some insider trading that I heard that was actually going on as well.
Yes.
You've done original research on your website.
Yes, I have just returned from England last month, where I was in serious talks with the BBC. We're expecting to announce soon a full-hour BBC documentary on the insider trading of 9/11 using my research. There was massive trading on the financial markets from Tokyo to San Francisco to Chicago to London to Berlin, all before 9/11, exercising put options, which are basically bets that a stock price will go down on American Airlines, United Airlines, and many other companies directly affected by 9/11.
Now, I heard someone in the FBI, or formerly that was in the FBI, was involved in this.
No, someone at the CIA seems was involved in this, we think. A guy by the name of Buzzy Krongard, who was the executive director of a firm called Alex Brown, which is now a unit of Deutsche Bank, which is where many of the United Airlines were put options were placed. He became the executive director, the number three spot at CIA before 9/11. He was appointed by President Bush. So, there's lots of very, very stinky connections on the insider trading. And And what's interesting is that I researched that. I got quotes from Bloomberg, from Financial Times, all the biggest financial experts in the world. This is the most outrageous example of insider trading we've ever seen. Ernst Weltke, the president of the Bundesbank, the German state bank, said, I've never seen anything like this. It's a horrible crime. And yet, according to the 9/11 Commission and the FBI, who testified later, well, everybody was mistaken. These trades never occurred. And that's absolute nonsense. Those trades did occur. They've never been explained.
Okay. Never been explained? Has anyone been brought to justice? Anyone been questioned at all?
No.
No?
No. There was testimony in the House hearings, House and Senate hearings, there were joint hearings, from an FBI agent who said, I'm sorry, everybody was just mistaken, this was all a coincidence.
Okay.
And that was it.
Now, even more specifically, Mike, and again, a lot of this is involved in crossing the Rubicon, so if you still have questions and some things aren't explained, I would recommend you go to his website, fromthewilderness.com, or read the book. And I have some questions myself. Now, what specifically did they know about the hijackers prior, as far as low-end FBI or CIA, for that matter, or meetings between Osama and the CIA? I mean, there's a lot of information out there.
Well, a long historical record. I mean, we could do an hour on Osama alone. I'd rather not. I think it's more important to talk about the hijackers, in that we've clearly established that the hijackers were being watched very closely. We do know, thanks to Newsweek, that five of the so-called 19 hijackers had received training at U.S. military bases.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's strange that not one of them had even an instrument flight certificate. The maneuvers that were performed by the airplanes on 9/11 were absolutely impossible for somebody who didn't even have a pilot's license.
Apparently it came from up here, shot all the way down.
That's the Pentagon. Made a 270 and almost a ground loop coming in at ground level. But there were five separate investigations looking into groups containing the hijackers.
Right.
Several of the hijackers, by the way, had also fought in Al-Qaeda operations in Chechnya that were directly tied by government records to the CIA.
Mm-hmm.
Very key there, a key point. But five separate FBI investigations run by brick agents. That's what we call them. I was a street cop, and the FBI, they call them brick agents. They want to put the bad guys in jail. Were all suppressed, and any one of them, had they been pursued, in theory, could have stopped the whole attack.
Mm-hmm.
There was one man I found in the course of my investigation, a special agent by the name of David Frasca, who is the guy who destroyed all five of these investigations, and he was, instead of being fired, he was promoted immediately after 9/11.
Now, what else was going on with 9/11? Apparently, prior to the attacks on 9/11, there was literally a 95%... according to the UN, reduction in heroin coming out of Afghanistan.
Yep.
And I find that really interesting. Before they were talking, in cahoots with the Taliban, talking about Unocal with the proposed pipeline in 99.
Yep.
Where are we today with the heroin trade? And this kind of ties back to what we were talking about before the video.
Right.
And a possible motivation for invading Afghanistan.
Well, there were a number of reasons. I think strategically, one of the best reference points is a book that I've helped sell a lot of. I don't like the guy. It's Zbigniew Brzezinski's book, The Grand Chessboard. He's a former national security
advisor. I staged a protest against him a few months ago.
But he kind of lays out the thinking. Now, there was intense pressure to get oil out of the Caspian Basin to markets.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a plan to build a pipeline across Afghanistan down to the Pakistani coast. That has now changed. We've just seen the opening of the Baku-Tbilisi-Ceyhan pipeline, which is moving some Caspian oil. Unfortunately, what was being discovered at the time was that the reserves that were hoped to be in the Caspian Basin were nowhere near as large as anybody hoped. They had originally been hoping for 250 billion barrels. Now maybe there's 40 billion barrels of oil. To put that in context, the planet Earth is using a billion barrels of oil every 11 and one-half days. That's not a lot of oil left anymore. The planet's running out of oil, which is the broader motive for 9/11.
Okay.
But the financial markets are very interesting, having to do with the heroin or opium issue. I had been in Moscow, Russia in 2001 when the Taliban destroyed all the opium crops in Afghanistan. At the time, Afghanistan was supplying about 60% of the world's opium heroin. Now, that money has to get laundered. And what the Taliban did by destroying the opium production in Afghanistan was literally take about $200 billion a year out of Western financial markets. That money wasn't getting laundered. It wasn't buying stocks. When we invaded Afghanistan immediately after 9/11, the CIA took control and released opium warlords from prison. And in the years since the U.S. occupation, and it is an occupation, I do not consider Hamid Karzai to be a validly elected president. He is a Roman consul of an emperor's colony.
What was his relationship to UNICAL?
Well, he had been a business consultant for UNICAL.
Yeah.
But opium production in Afghanistan now is exceeding all the production in 2001 before the attacks was maybe 60 tons nationwide. The last harvest was close to 5,000 metric tons, all under CIA control. And all that money is being laundered now through Western banks.
And that's not you saying it. That's the U.N. I read that report this morning.
Not only the U.N., it's the ABC. It's, you know, ABC, major news sources, the BBC, DEA, UNDCP, U.N. drug control. It's all been verified. Afghanistan's now supplying 80% of the world's opium, and that's all under CIA control. All that money is being laundered through Wall Street because our economy is extremely fragile, and it's probably going to go sometime the third or fourth quarter of this year.
Amazing.
We can get to that.
Amazing. Now, what else, Mr. Rupert, really stands out for you as far as 9/11 and what was never answered during the commission?
Well, what's amazing is that the war games for me is the point where I can hook the government immediately. Mm-hmm. What idiot would have scheduled five separate war games, including live flies, 22 false radar blips, moving all the fighters out of the region, et cetera, et cetera. And now I should add that using the Secret Service in this country under law, the Secret Service is the superordinate agency over every other agency in the government, including the Pentagon.
Mm-hmm.
And there are two emergency rooms in the White House. One is the crisis situation room upstairs where Richard Clark was. The second is the PEOC, the Presidential Emergency Operations Center, which is the bunker. They have completely redundant command and control systems there where they can intervene in everything from the FAA to the Air Force, the Pentagon, the Forest Service, whoever. And down there, Dick Cheney was literally running 9/11. But if you take the war games and you look at the way the war games played out, this information was the Keene Commission, which was charged with looking at 9/11,
right,
absolutely lied. They only mentioned the war games in one footnote.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a wonderful writer. I have a ton of wonderful writers at From the Wilderness, Stan Goff, Jamie Hecht, Dale Allen Pfeiffer, but one incredible young man, Michael Caine, was at the final commission hearing, and he actually questioned the generals, the NORAD generals, who basically denied knowing anything about it. And they literally ran out of the building to get away. And the Caine Commission itself falsified records in its final report. In other words, we were able to see all the evidence that had been submitted to the Caine Commission in terms of timelines, who responded when, who was notified.
Right.
In their final report, they came out with a list of times that nobody had ever even presented to them before. So they falsified all that evidence and covered it up.
You know, all the stuff that we've talked about, we've barely scratched the surface.
Yes.
And we haven't talked about the things that possibly we don't even know about. Now, here's my question specifically. We're here in Portland, Oregon, one of the most alternative protesting cities that there is in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Yet a lot of people don't care about 9/11 or don't believe that it may have been a cover-up or a covert op. My question to you is, how has your relationship been with other people in the so-called 9/11 truth movement?
Well, there's a lot of controversy, but then my experience, and you can certainly go back to the experience of COINTELPRO in the 1960s, that not everybody who was a radical or activist really is one. There are a lot of wolves in sheep's clothing.
Right.
There are a lot of people being led. By and large, as those who have read the book understand that I give credit, I didn't do this all by myself. There's 40 or 50 wonderful 9/11 researchers in there who I heap praise upon and source them and cite them. And with that community, I'm in wonderful standing. There has been a lot of other controversy with people who I consider to be either belligerently naive or who are deliberately spreading disinformation about 9/11 in order to confuse public response. One of my dear friends, Peter Dale Scott, who was a professor emeritus at UC Berkeley, has written a number of books on Iran-Contra, says that disinformation, in order to be effective, must be 90% accurate. And so that's how you get people to swallow the 10%, which is a lie, because if you swallow that 10% that's a lie or inaccurate, that can be used to discredit you down the road. And that's why I have avoided some of those other issues that other people seem to think are so important. I'm a very practical guy on a battlefield here.
When I bring up the term left gatekeeping,
yes,
do you have any comments?
It's real. It's very real. And I think actually I think there's been quite a bit of awareness since 9/11 because of the battles that I and many other people have fought with so-called gatekeepers on the left. Mm-hmm. And we found, of course, that many of them receive large grants from the Ford Foundation, which is closely connected mm-hmm. to the CIA. Many of them receive from the Carnegie Foundation, from many other places, where you see that they are deliberately put out to, if you will, limit the parameters of debate or to discredit real issues. Because if you look at it this way, if you were on top, if you were the elite, the ruling elite, you would love to control both sides of a debate. Then you really wouldn't have anything to worry mm-hmm. about. And that has been experienced greatly. We've also seen just a lot of people who do not appreciate. I did this according to legal standards of evidence,
right,
with academic footnoting. It's interesting, very briefly, that since Rubicon has come out, nobody has attacked my research. They attack me personally, but nobody has attacked the research in that book.
Since you brought up the Ford Foundation, I was reading on Portland Indie Media this morning about some controversy going on with KBOO and whether or not to air Democracy Now, pertaining to her receiving some money from the Ford Foundation.
Her being Amy Goodman. You can say it or I'll say it, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going to make any allegations, but I will say I did read a transcript between her and David Ray Griffin, mm-hmm. and some could say she was just doing her job being a reporter, but I don't feel that Amy Goodman represents me as someone that is at the core of the Portland 9/11 truth movement.
Well, there was something interesting that happened. When I was first talking about 9/11 after it happened, I became a very large hit on throughout the Pacifica radio network at BAI in New York, at KPFK in Los Angeles, and KPFA in Berkeley. And as I was going on the show one day at the height of their fundraising drive, suddenly at the last minute someone came on to debate me, and that was a guy named Norman Solomon, someone mm-hmm. who I consider to be a gatekeeper. And his attacks were ridiculous. I mean, he said I had quoted Oliver North, therefore I like Republicans. I hate Oliver North. I quoted him because he's my enemy, and I was using the quote against him, et cetera. Then he says this and that. You can't trust this guy. There were false internal memos circulated. But I was attacked on the air to distract from the power that my broadcast would have. Mm-hmm. And I went, you know, of course, I have survived that. And, of course, years later down the road, I hear Norman Solomon talking about stuff I was talking about 4 years ago. When David Ray Griffin went on Amy Goodman, he was attacked by Chip Berlé in an ambush-type attack. Which I consider to be, they will, of course, put it off, well, we have to show both sides, and I say, nonsense. If you're performing ethically as a journalist and broadcast journalism with your guest, you set up the terms of your interview beforehand and you don't violate them.
Right. And Griffin's an educated person.
Well,
I mean, he's not exactly like someone who just grabs something and just throws it out there without doing research.
He's very educated, but he is not, as I have been for 30 years, living in the heart and the belly of covert operations, dirty tricks, and sneaky things.
Yeah. You know, when I get frustrated sometimes and I think people don't care anymore, and I'm not really sure what poll is telling me the truth, I got to get out there in the street, and all of you should too, and find out what people really think. Amy Goodman came to town here a few months back, and I was really starting to believe that people didn't care about 9/11 anymore in the so-called left or activist movement. So I went down there with Courtney Scott of Mattisell TV, and we started asking some people some questions about how they felt about 9/11. We got a lot of negative response and a lot of dirty looks, but a few people had the guts to stand up and tell us how they really felt about 9/11. I'm going to show you that clip right now, and when we come back, we'll get to what 9/11 is really being set up for. Be right back.
I was very saddened by all the people dying, as I was when people die in Iraq today, but I think it's been only an opportunity for the right wing to seize power in this country, and I think it's been reprehensible. The report, I think, clearly was not thorough and tried to cover up some of the facts, but I'm not an expert on it. Thank you.
It's a story of 9/11, and it seems to be true coming to what even the government's finding out, what even they're telling you on the news, you know, but it's like that for a lot of things. They tell you later on, years later sometimes, what the truth is. So you just got to dig a little harder to get the truth and do something about it, you know. Thank you.
Out of seven people we asked, the last two you saw were the only ones that were willing to say anything about 9/11. I'm not BSing when I say the apathy factor is really bad. People are afraid to say what they really think.
I also feel that the attacks were taken upon us by really not the right group that we attacked and went to war for. I don't believe that Iraqi citizens should be paying for the war that we're taking and claiming that it has to do with September 11th.
I'm aware that America was attacked, and it was for rightful. I think there are some reasons behind it that weren't really approached, and the context was never spoken about. I think that was the biggest mistake, is, as she said, going into Iraq and attacking a people without ever looking at our own actions that might have led to that.
I believe that once the attack happened, let's just leave it. I don't believe their story for sure. I do not believe the official story. That's about it.
You don't want to play. Well, no. Fucking no. I don't believe the story at all. Yeah. So, in fact, I'm not even sure if it's possible to get a correct story in something as horrific as that. And rather than just respond with anger and hatred and vindictiveness and pointing the finger at who's responsible, rather than act like, just grieve for the fact that it happened and that it had to happen to get our attention.
They didn't know that there were going to be planes that were going to hit the buildings. Then they knew. Then they had, you know what the last story was? That they actually had some kind of training, anti-terrorist training. You know what the name of it was? 9/11. That's what the government called it. And they said that terrorists infiltrate their own training. And that's how they were able to do it, because they were going to have fake hijackings that they were going to intercept. You believe that? I don't. And just one more factoid. On September 10th, guess what happened? The Pentagon comes out and says they're missing $2.3 trillion. The next day, the two towers fell. I don't know if that means anything, but there it is.
So I just think that we should... I think we need people like Ward Churchill to come and speak to the populace, because the politicians become what they are through the educational system, and they're being taught to be racist in our educational system. Our leaders are. Therefore, we're all a part of the conflict, and we're all a part of the solution. So. The problem is that we're not getting to the solution.
There are far too many coincidences regarding that event. The fact that that the National Guard, which was only a few miles away, had to stand down. The fact that a plane could go that far, of course, without NORAD being notified that had happened. There are just far too many questions than answers. And I don't think the 9/11 Commission, like most commissions, are more about preserving the status quo than about really trying to get to the bottom of what really happened there and why 3,000 people ended up dying that day.
In my experience, as a result of 9/11, and I don't know what else I can say about it. I know there's a lot of controversy about 9/11 right now, and you brought up an awful lot of things that I think I've heard of in the last 3 years since 9/11.
Mike, you're doing a lot of interesting research on peak oil. Do you believe that's why perhaps 9/11 was allowed to go on?
Absolutely. I mean, in a homicide investigation or a murder trial, you have to establish means, motive, and opportunity. There is no question that 9/11 and our world has changed in ways that if we stop to think about it, would numb your mind in just the 3 years since 9/11. The motive for that change, the motive for the government to do something, quote-unquote, that heinous, which I think people should be executed for, is the fact that the world is beginning to run out of hydrocarbon energy, period. There are no replacements for hydrocarbon energy, nothing, because energy infrastructures take 30 years to replace, and there's no combination of alternative energy sources.
It's interesting to say that, because this year at the Bilderberg Conference, of all places,
yeah,
that was one of their topics. You know what they proposed?
No.
A UN worldwide tax. that they've been talking about doing for a while. You enroll tax, but now they're going to put on oil. Imagine that.
Yeah, well, I've seen some, unfortunately my father died just before we came up here, and I haven't had a chance to read, but there's very interesting stuff coming out of the Bilderbergers, which doesn't surprise me in the least,
right,
because it follows the evidence. And the fact is that 18 of the world's largest oil-producing nations are now in decline. Oil production is declining worldwide. There's no more oil to find, really. I mean, in 2003 and 2004, there was not a single discovery of a field of 500 million barrels.
Right.
That's a six-day supply for the planet.
Mm-hmm.
Discoveries have been in severe decline since the mid-1960s.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to such extreme measures as mining the Canadian tar sands, which is totally destructive of the environment.
Well, even Carter talked about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what's driving world events now, and now we have the G7 talking about it, and now it's coming up because it can't be hidden. Now, there are 10 calories of hydrocarbon energy in every calorie of food consumed on the planet. You take away the oil and the natural gas, you take away the food. So this is a crisis that like none that has ever faced mankind. And this is now it's pretty much out of the closet, and we're seeing now that the largest consuming country, it's interesting, the groups like the Bilderbergers and the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, a lot of their members have come up in the last 6 months with a new term that I'd never heard before called demand destruction. And one of the ways to mitigate, as demand is rising exponentially, China's economy is growing at 8% a year, is you destroy demand. How do you destroy demand? You create a recession.
Right.
This country, with 5% of the world's population, uses 25% of the world's oil. So if you destroy demand, the fact is that people who are out of work, bankrupt, broke, whose homes have been foreclosed, the housing bubble's going this year, the markets are going this year, so that people who are out of work and broke don't buy gasoline, don't go on long trips. You destroy demand that way.
Now, you had talked about Brzezinski earlier in this show. You know, I took a look at some of the things that Brzezinski wrote about, you know, and he wrote something on technology between two ages back in the 70s. Later on, he wrote The Grand Chessboard, and now he wrote another book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this kind of stuff, I noticed, got him attracted people like Rockefeller, you know, to make him the head of the director of the Trilateral Commission in 1973.
Yep.
And I try to tell people this a few months ago when Brzezinski came to Portland, and he's put on this phony presentation, well, I'm against Bush, I'm against the war, really because it costs too much for the Europeans.
Right.
When in reality, he's, you could say, an elite himself. How do you feel about
Brzezinski? He is absolutely an elite.
Right.
And sometimes you learn...
It seems like he's the brain of the oil-seeking operation.
Well, I wouldn't say he's the brain. There are many, many brains to this. And my philosophy is, and this is where I diverge from a lot of people who say they want to know who. Who? Who do we blame? Who do we go hang? Who do we do... You know. And I say, look, you can get rid of all these evil guys, pick anyone you want to, and they would be replaced. And the reason why they would be replaced is because until we change the way money works, we change nothing. Money, we now live in basically it's disaster economy, but with an economic paradigm based on fractional reserve banking, debt-based growth, and a fiat currency. It's essentially a pyramid scheme that has to keep growing, but it's more profitable to kill things, to destroy, to lock people up than it is to create a stable, happy, free living environment. There's more money to be made that way. So it's not so much the who for me as the what. It's the system. There are a lot of people who should be put in jail.
The old phrase, wealth isn't lost, it's simply transferred.
Well, and believe me, the Great Depression was not a loss of wealth. It was one of the largest wealth transfers in human history. And what's going to hit the U.S. economy in 2005, the latter part of 2005 and 2006, is going to be exactly the same thing. And it's going to be brutal.
What exactly are you seeing, Mike?
Well, first of all, the housing bubble is going to collapse enormously. The trade deficit with China is now out of control. The U.S. dollar, the world, is now rebelling against U.S. imperial bullying around the world. We see major alliances forming. One in particular, BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, and China, forming against the U.S. Hugo Chavez, the fourth largest oil supplier to this country, is uniting Latin America. China will eventually float its currency, the yuan. The dollar is in dire straits, and that's being propped up. So the dollar may lose value. China floats the yuan. Anything you buy at Walmart from China now is going to go up 40%. This country is so deeply in debt, the foreclosure rates are going to go through the roof. The housing bubble is going to pop very, very quickly. And they've just rewritten the bankruptcy laws. And if you look at the new bankruptcy bill, and some people talk about the Patriot Act. There's Patriot 1 and like a Patriot 1.2, and they didn't put it all in one. The Homeland Security bill was equally frightening. There's some medical bioterror legislation which has been equally draconian, but the latest bankruptcy bill is part of a package that's, to me, it's utterly fascistic in that you won't be able to discharge your debt anymore in bankruptcy. Corporations will literally tell you how much money you get to live on and where you get to work if you try to file bankruptcy from now on.
I've heard allegations of a debtor's prison.
Well, except for the elites have decided it's not good to have people in a debtor's prison. Why don't you have them just work as slaves? Indentured servitude is much, much better. And actually, the prisons nowadays, with so many of them being run by private corporations, when you make reservations on, let's say, American or United Airlines, or you talk to, Holiday Inn, you might be talking to a convict in prison who's handling this stuff for pennies on the dollar to boost corporate stock shares. So this is the end game of a very destructive kind of capitalism.
Now, you said earlier that the euro pretty much is kicking the dollar's butt. Why is that?
Well, several reasons. First of all, it's partially gold-backed, and I am a big fan of gold. Owning physical gold is a store of wealth. But secondly, Europe has its house more together, but America is so deeply in debt, the United States in particular. Debt levels have never been higher anywhere in this country's history. Even 1928-29 pale in comparison to the debt level. There's no savings in this country. We're oversaturated with consumer goods. We are taught to be good corporate citizens and obedient, but then we're taught to shop in supermarkets like Attila the Hun to go in debt. Well, we can't buy much more stuff. And meanwhile, the rest of the world wants stuff that we have. And of course, all of this now is dependent upon hydrocarbon energy.
Do you see any solutions there?
Well, no. You can change nothing as long as the planet Earth is consuming the way it's consuming now. We're also facing major climatological collapse. Mm-hmm. The Gulf Stream is starting to submerge. The polar ice caps are melting. I live in Los Angeles. I had more rain in Los Angeles this last year than you had in Portland. 35 inches in Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
The Earth's climate is in full revolt right now, and so we could see some major things happening there. Consumption must be stopped, or not stopped. It must be seriously curtailed. But you can't change that until you change the way money works. But oil and energy supplies are now critical. Globalization is dead. The reason why globalization is dead is because globalization is based upon flying strawberries from Chile to Portland when they could be grown in Eugene.
Right.
It's based upon flying tin or shipping tin from Australia to England to make a tin can to Norway to put in sardines to go to Denmark to be packaged. That's all fuel. 70% of all transportation is powered by oil.
Right.
So as the oil becomes so expensive and scarce, that will be done. Also, what I'm promoting now, which is more important than 9/11, which is over, we're not going to win that case. There's no court to take it to, is to teach people how to survive in a world that's going to change very, very dramatically.
True.
That's going to be local.
But on that point you just made, would you say at least to people that have the facts, that have the good information, that have gone to your site, they stick with that and keep telling people about 9/11? Those that are willing to listen.
Those are willing to listen.
And therefore, if they awaken to that, they can awaken to the rest of the things you're talking about.
Yes, but one of the ways psychologically where the average Joe citizen couldn't fathom that his government would do something like this is to understand the enormity of the threat posed by peak oil. Not that I'm sanctioning what was done on 9/11, but I can. But you can explain the rationale for the criminals who
What is your direction going to be down the road? After crossing the Rubicon, sells out, you go around the country and you speak, and you continue with your website on FromTheWilderness.com. Where is the vision going to be with you and the 9/11 movement?
Well, listen, there isn't a 9/11 movement. There isn't. What I'm saying is I have dropped 9/11 because the 2000 election was stolen. The 2004 election was stolen. Mm-hmm. Voter fraud. There's nothing you can do in the electoral place. Congress has shown no courage. The Kane Commission has closed its doors.
Right.
The U.S. Congress has dropped 9/11. There's no court anywhere that you can take the issue with. So what is the movement for? I mean, it's 2005. John Kennedy was assassinated in 63. So we are 42 years past the assassination of John Kennedy, and there is still a JFK movement. But do you honestly think JFK is going to be brought the assassination of JFK is going to be brought to trial.
True. I'm just coming from the stance that a lot of people believe 9/11 was executed as a Reichstag to execute martial law.
It was.
Okay.
Martial law, among other things. Martial law is not the end game. Control is never the end game because you have to have an objective with the control.
Mm-hmm.
Just to have control is, right. Okay, so the objective is to control the last remaining oil reserves on the planet.
Right.
And to control economic and social collapse. Right. Around the world. Yes, it was definitely a Reichstag, but it was only a step in a series of evolutions.
Right.
Unfortunately, that's passed. I mean, I wrote a book about 9/11.
Okay.
And why would I want to hurt my own book sales by saying the 9/11 issue is dead? But the 9/11 issue is dead. I don't care about anything except results on the political landscape,
okay. How
I can change the political landscape.
Now, there's a lot of you at home that have questions that we didn't get into tonight. Now, my question for you, Mike, is how can someone, Mr. Joe Citizen, watching our program tonight, get started to be a part of a movement, be a part of a truth movement, get the information out there? I mean, where could someone who's helpless, that says, I don't want us to run out of oil, or I don't want to be in a police state, or I don't want them to get away with 9/11. I mean, what should people be mobilizing to do out there?
Well, first of all, people need to learn. There are too many people who just wake up to something like this, and they run up to people. I'm not the only one, but just, let's just use me. 30 years of doing this the hard way. I've been shot at twice, you know, forced into bankruptcy. They're still trying to put my company out of business, etc. I've seen what works and what doesn't work over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the unfortunate tendency for somebody new to this is they'll come and they'll say, okay, well, you have to write letters to Congress, and you have to do this and that stuff that all of us have been doing for 25 years, and we go, no.
Right.
I'm in college. I'm not going back to kindergarten.
And what commission has ever done anything for us? Whether it be Warren, Watergate, or 9/11.
So what you do is have to learn how the system works. Now, one of my dearest friends, Catherine Austin Fitz, a former Assistant Secretary of Housing, has said very clearly, you fight with your money.
Right.
Every vote may not be counted, but every dollar is always counted. And one of the things that I've done with my business From the Wilderness is that I have changed a paradigm. We've unfortunately been taught to believe that being poor is like saintly and progressives ought to be poor and do it all for free. Well, unfortunately, you get poor work quality, you get tired activists who don't eat, can't pay the rent, they're stressed out, and they're not very effective. That's not the way the bad guys work.
Right.
So I've been using my model at From the Wilderness to give the money to the good writers, because what I found is the really good writers like the Stan Goss, the Jamie Hecks, all these wonderful guys who are out there who would give it away, write much better when their rent's paid.
Okay.
So we have to learn how to spend our money to support each other, to create our own economic paradigm, to buy our own goods, to buy our own videotapes, to buy our own books, to keep us stronger, because that's how we become more effective.
Now, you're actually in Portland to speak tomorrow, aren't you?
Yes, I'm going to speak tomorrow night largely on peak oil. We're going to talk a little bit about 9/11 because it's all connected, and the coming collapse. And, of course, as we enter the summer of 2005, it's a critical turning point in world history and the energy markets, because now we also see that peak oil is out of the closet. It can't be denied anymore.
Well, I'll be there front and center. Mike, thank you so much
for
coming to Portland and coming to Cable Access.
I'm always happy to be in Oregon.
Well, you heard it, folks. He's done the research, and a lot of it's original. If you have more questions, you can go to his website, fromthewilderness.com, or you can pick up Crossing the Rubicon at just about any bookstore in Portland. I highly recommend you keep watching this show for further updates. We will be starting a series at the end of June. If you would like to be a guest or know someone coming to town that could be a guest, if you think they can cut it on Outside the Box, get in contact with me. Well, I'm Alex Ansari. See you next time.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich. That's how it goes. Everybody knows. Everybody knows that the boat is leaking. Everybody knows the captain lied. Everybody got this broken feeling, like their father or their dog just died. Everybody talking to their pockets. Everybody wants a box of chocolates and a long STEM Road.